Covert Action Bulletin, Ecologic, Democracy Now, and that's less than a handful. And you hear this all day, every day, over this radio station in the center of the FM dial in New York City. Right now, it's 10 a.m. Stay tuned for Ecologic.
A boutique and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? It'd be paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, then tell me where we gonna plant our seed. It makes me wanna cry for the children. Makes me wanna.
See a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for Wednesday, October 4th, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Today we'll be talking with biologist Dr. Abby Hafer about fascinating animals. But first, Toltec wastewater dump loophole. Save energy while cooking spaghetti, melting sea ice and emperor penguins, global warming, stopping photosynthesis, and a Cop City win.
The Stop Cop City Coalition submitted more than 116,000 voter signatures to the city of Atlanta, almost double the number required to put a referendum on the ballot. Last week, the city council passed a unanimous resolution in support, so they are now scanning signatures.
I was at a street fair where my state assembly member had a table. I asked about the Holtec radioactive wastewater situation and was introduced to the environmental staffer. He said the bill was signed. I answered, there's a loophole. That got his attention. I told him that at the Pilgrim Nuclear Plant in Massachusetts, where there is already a ban against dumping, Holtec is evaporating the wastewater. Last week, you heard how dangerous tritium and tritiated water is when it gets in your body. If Holtec evaporates the Indian Point wastewater 24 miles north of New York City, the radioactive water is likely to get into New York City's holding reservoirs, which are east of Indian Point, and prevailing winds go right in that direction. If the wind goes south, the radioactive rain goes right over New York City. If southwest, over New Jersey. If northwest, over the Catskills, the source of water for New York City and many other counties. A Holtec employee blew the whistle to the Boston Globe on what Holtec was doing in Massachusetts. The environmental staffer asked me to send that and any information I could send him about tritium hazards and the wastewater. He replied right away, said he would bump it up and look to network with Westchester representatives. I tell you this story to encourage as many of you as possible to do the same. You can contact your state senators and assembly members and get the same attention. We link to the Boston Globe story on our website. You can also link to the episode of Ecologic about tritium. Send both links to your state reps. They'll respond to the word loophole.
Emperor penguins are among the most majestic and are the largest species of penguins. I'm sad to report that due to melting ice, thousands of chicks didn't make it last year. Annie Schmidt, a seabird ecologist at Point Blue Conservation Science in Petaluma, California, says documenting breed failure across several colonies at once is the first observation that's in line with the worst expectations of what could happen as the Earth continues to warm. Emperor penguin chicks' downy feathers are not waterproof, which makes them vulnerable. Emperor penguins rely on stable sea ice throughout their breeding season, which lasts from April to January. In a 2020 study of five colonies in Antarctica, only one had surviving chicks. 2 years later, in 2022, Peter Fretwell of the British Antarctic Survey in Cambridge, England, said of the youngsters from the 10,000 or so breeding pairs in the Antarctic region, we think about only 850 of the chicks survived. That means over 90% died. On a hopeful note, Annie Schmidt says penguin colonies can recover from a single failed breeding season, and the researchers looked at only a few emperor penguin colonies of the 62 throughout Antarctica. Still, the melting sea ice paints a grim picture for many species. Recent estimates predict that the changing climate and melting sea ice could cut emperor penguin populations by more than half by 2100. Despite that potentially grim outlook for emperor penguins, Fretwell still has hope. If we can slow down global warming, we can turn around the fate of the emperor penguin. Isn't that all our goal? But that window of opportunity is getting smaller, so we really have to act now. The fate of the emperor penguin is the fate of the world we all live in. Melting ice causes sea levels to rise and our coastal towns to disappear. Emperor penguins are just one indication.
Here's an easy way to save energy while cooking without affecting the food. Our friend Ira told us about a neat energy-saving way to cook pasta. When you cook any macaroni or pasta, from spaghetti to lasagna, boil it as you normally do, but for only 2 minutes. Then cover the pot and turn off the gas or electricity. Let it sit for the rest of the usual time, and it will be done. If you generally cook it for 7 minutes, cook it for two, turn it off, and cover it for 5 minutes. It'll be done, and you save 5/7 of the amount of fuel you would have used, 5/7 of the amount of money, and 5/7 of the amount of greenhouse gas. It works.
There's an important article by Nick Ogasa in the latest issue of Science News magazine. It's based on a study at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. We all know that too much heat can kill animals, but it can kill plants too. The global warming part of climate chaos can stop photosynthesis by plants, which is how they use the sun's energy to grow. It also dries the soil they live in. Small increases in ambient temperatures have a much greater effect on plants. Large trees will die first, then the forest understory. The entire planet is headed in a direction where the ecosystem that a plant lives in is getting too hot. Plants are the base of the food chain. If they go, every animal goes too. Continued human addiction to fossil fuels and nuclear energy is killing all life on Earth. There is a hope, not backed up by any data, that plants will somehow adapt in ways no one is able to predict. There are certainly some people who think geoengineering will solve the problem, or we don't need to change that addiction. But that way of thinking has always done more harm than good.
Now we welcome our guest, Abby Hafer. Abby, please introduce yourself.
Okay, first off, I'm going to ask, can you hear me?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, thanks for having me on. Thanks very much. My name is Abby Hafer, and I teach human anatomy and physiology at Curry College in Massachusetts, and I have a doctorate in zoology from Oxford University. So today we're playing more off of, what I did while I was studying zoology and things that I have learned since this is mostly about, as Ken has asked me to think about, fascinating animals. So that's where we're going with this today.
When I asked you about this, you said that your favorite right now is the marbled crayfish. I don't think most of us have heard of the marbled crayfish. So tell us what it is and why it's so fascinating.
Okay, yeah, the marbled crayfish is one of my current favorite animals. First of all, I should explain that, you know, being a zoologist, I am pretty much by definition an evolutionary biologist, and this has always been a source of fascination to me. And it means that I have dealt a lot with creationists during my time. And one of the things that they will always say is, well, you know, what's the evidence for evolution? And even after you give them lots of evidence, they still don't believe you. And so you'll say things like, for instance, this pandemic we had just recently and are still having. I say every new disease is the result of evolution because that virus evolved and that evolution is, well, what made us all sick. A few strands of viral RNA changed, and as a result, we had a worldwide pandemic. That's evolution in action. It happened right in front of us. But then the creationists will say, and this is strictly a loophole, but it's what they say, that's microevolution. And so, but, you know, we're talking that, okay, so we can see how things can change a little bit here and there. But, you know, when are you going to, you've never seen a dog turn into a cat, which is a complete misconception of evolution, but this is what they say. But now we have in front of us what they're really getting at is we want to see it among multicellular plants or animals, preferably animals because they don't really think very much about plants. So we now have a brand new one that I absolutely love called the marbled crayfish, which is a multicellular species that has evolved within the last few years, well within my lifetime. And what's more, it has evolved in full view of everybody.
Yeah.
Because it happened in aquariums. What happened is that there is a small crayfish that lives in the American South, that the North American South, I should say, the South of the United States. Nice little crayfish, which is a popular aquarium pet. So, you know, they live all over the world in aquaria. And at one point, there was a change in them in an aquarium in Germany. And I'm not quite sure of the details, but what happened was that basically a new species evolved right in front of our eyes. And this little southern United States crayfish evolved into another species. We still have the original crayfish, but we now also have a new splintered off species of crayfish called the marbled crayfish, which is about 50% bigger. It looks different. And it is all female. And this turned out to be a problem for an aquarium pet because suddenly they were breeding uncontrollably because you could not separate males from females and have that make any difference at all. So people did, unfortunately, what people do, and they, when they got too many crayfish in their aquaria, they put the extras into local ponds. As a result, it's now an invasive species in many parts of the world. But it is a highly successful new species. There's really no way around that. There is no arguing it, which is, and I mean, it's weird in so many wonderful ways, this all-female species. I should explain, by the way, that in evolutionary biology, sex is a really good genetic mixer. So usually what happens is that a species will eventually run into some challenge, usually an environmental challenge, that it cannot meet with its sort of current genetic, you know, its current genetic mix, and it is through sexual reproduction that they have a better chance of surviving because you get this great sort of mixing of different genetic traits, which usually means that there's some mixes that will, by sheer accident, be a little bit helpful in whatever the new environment is, what in dealing with whatever the environmental challenge is. So all female species do not tend to last a long time, but in evolution, a long time might mean a couple of years or it might mean a couple hundred thousand years. So we just get to see in real time how this natural experiment plays out. So as I said, that is why the marbled crayfish is one of my current favorite animals.
And you were telling us about sex being a large factor and that some animals are all female. What are your other fascinating animals that fit into that category?
Well, I'm thinking that's the only all-female species that I can think of straight off the bat, but there are many.
Okay, I can think of one.
Okay.
There's a mountain lizard in the western United States that is all-female.
It
seems to be breeding at a you know, what's considered a normal rate. It's not going crazy or anything. But it's been around for a while. I believe that's another species that we saw develop.
Huh.
It's related to another species on a neighboring mountain, but they can't breed with that other species.
And there are many species that can breed with only females, and there's a long list of them. There are bonnethead sharks, black-tip sharks. You'd notice a lot of sharks here. Leopard right. sharks, zebra sharks, small white spotted bamboo sharks, many snakes, including boa constrictors, and many snakes. Oh, sorry, what am I saying here? Many snakes, including boa constrictors, 50 species of lizards, including another of my favorite animals, the Komodo dragons. And they can all breed without males. And with some of the sharks, this was, again, found out in aquaria, in this case, commercial aquariums, where they will have some big sharks. And again, there was one case where, you know, the aquarium personnel knew that there was exactly one female of that species in the aquarium. And, you know, there she was, all by herself, and yet she managed to breed. Mm-hmm. And this was how they eventually figured out that this female had bred without males. And this is one of the cases of you don't find things unless you're looking for them. Mm-hmm. Once they knew that this particular species of shark could breed without males, now it's something that, you know, people are actually paying attention to see if it happens. This is often the way it works. And I mean, it's not anybody's fault. That's just, you know, you have to kind of know to even look for something before you find it a great deal of the time.
And you were talking about Lex, and I just love Lex. Someday I want to go to one. Tell us what a Lex is, because you had an interesting perspective I'd never heard before.
Okay, well, Lex are male displays of a bunch of different bird species, but for instance, the sage grouse. And what happens is that the males will all get together and they will do their displays together. So there's this fun thing to watch, as Ken has pointed out, where all the males will get together in one area and do their displays together in order to attract females. And this is an interesting case of both competition, which you hear about all the time. In fact, lay people very often think that, you know, evolution is only about competition. And so on the one hand, the males are competing, but on the other hand, the males are also cooperating, because the one male by itself might not be able to be seen very easily. And simply displaying by himself might not attract many females. But with all the males getting together in one area and displaying together, they can attract lots of females. And so there is actually a very cooperative aspect to this, as well as competition for the female. So it is both at the same time. In this case, you don't really have one without the other. Mm-hmm. And, well, it's rather like certain industries where, of course, they compete among one another, but they will also have ways of cooperating. For instance, restaurant districts in cities. You might not go out of your way for one really good restaurant. I know people do. But nonetheless, being able to go to a certain portion of town where you will have your choice of restaurants, is a known thing that happens.
Sure.
The same thing out where I live, there's an area called Auto Mile, which is where all the different car dealerships are. And this is a very common thing. Because it is known among auto dealers that having automobile dealers together, even if they are, competing dealerships and competing brands, they still do better when they're all in a similar location. So, as I said, it's an interesting case where, human economics also has a similar way of operating to these LEC displays out west.
That's the great, and Route 46 in New Jersey has a Auto Mile. There's also some of the LECs, like the Ruffed Grouse in Pennsylvania, New Jersey. And instead of dancing like some of the Western grouse do, they have drumming displays. It's all, they stand on a hollow log and they flap their wings really hard and make these booming noises. And I guess every female and every male comes over and goes, oh, yeah, I'm a better boomer than you. And the females have their pick.
No.
Well, that just seems like another case where the males all doing it together probably make far sounds that are heard at a greater distance than they would if they were operating alone.
Yeah,
I would think so. Someday I'm going to go to one.
That would be fun.
And one of the animals that Donna was interested in is the echidna. Tell us about that one, because that's fascinating in a lot of ways. Abby?
Oh, okay. I'm happy to let Donna. Did you want to say anything, Donna, or shall I dive in?
No, go dive in. That's I want to hear.
Okay. Okay, the echidna is a monotreme. The only other monotreme we have is the platypus, and they live in Australia, and they are a ton of fun. Mm-hmm. They don't really have fur. They have spines, but they are mammals, and they produce milk, which their young can drink, but they lay eggs. And they are known as anteaters, though they are not related to the African aardvarks. But they eat ants, and they dig in the ground and find more ants. And they're really very well adapted for digging. They have great big, huge, but soft claws for their front feet and long snouts. But as I said, they are this weird thing of an egg-laying mammal that does secrete milk. But they carry their young in a pouch for a while. So they kind of do it all in that weird Australian way. So they lay eggs. They carry their young in a pouch. They're covered with spines, but not porcupine quills. They are, but unhooked, unbarbed spines, I will say.
Like a hedgehog?
Yeah, like a hedgehog.
Yeah, they look a little like a hedgehog. And they're not related to the other egg-laying mammal, the platypus?
Oh, they are related to the platypus.
Okay.
They're not related to European hedgehogs or to porcupines or other animals that have quills, but they are related to platypuses, very much so.
I think we could do a whole show just on the weird and fascinating animals of Australia.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Now, do they have poison like a platypus does?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm not sure.
It's a strange sort of thing. We talked about that when we had you on last year. We talked about platypuses.
Hey, when we do the call-ins, the listeners should tell us what types of animals they want us to cover next.
Sure. And I want to jump in with one of my favorites. We're coming on a break, which is the black swallower, which is a fish in the deep, 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 deep ocean where it's pitch black. The sunlight doesn't get that far down. And the only light is what the animals themselves make. And there's all these different animals, all these different fish down there that make their own light. And the black swallower has a line of lights along its side and on its head. And it's called the black swallower. Besides being black in color, it can swallow something three times its size, and its stomach expands so it can do that. And if you're in a place where you can't see anything because everything is pitch black, if you meet something that you can eat, you have to eat it no matter what size it is. Mm-hmm. And that's how they adapted. Wow. It's a fascinating critter.
Other deep sea interesting thing is the octopus gardens, where they hang around the warm vents for so that they can the babies as they breed have a better chance of survival than in the really cold water.
Yeah, off the coast of California, they found thousands of octopuses laying eggs, and
the vents are where two tectonic plates separate, so you have the heat of the inner earth coming up, and that's where the energy comes from. That's where the heat comes from. It's called a vent because it comes out.
Right, and these are octopuses that generally spend their life in cold water, but when it comes to breeding, it gives the little babies a chance to grow faster and be less likely to be eaten by a predator. Pretty cool.
And we can't leave without having you talk about your other favorite, the mud skipper.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Okay. I mean, where to start with the mud skipper? It's another one of my favorite animals. Let's start at the very beginning. It's a walking fish. Again, remember, I deal with creationists and intelligent design people a lot. So I just love it when there's an actual walking fish, which this is, and it exists in real time. Many species of mud skippers. Sadly, none in North America. But these little fish basically live in intertidal areas. And so in mangrove swamps and all kinds of things like this, where the tide goes in, the tide goes out. And so what is going to be helpful to a small fish in an intertidal area? Thing about intertidal areas is that it's a great place for small fish until the tide comes in, and then big predator fish can come in along with the tide. So what would a fish do when it is confronted with big fish that might eat it? The obvious answer is to hop out of the water and climb a tree, which is what they do. Remember, a lot of these live in mangrove swamps, and this is a way of escaping from predators. They also live on beaches, and they breed. This is remarkable. They breed on land. They will dig a hole in the beach sand, and they'll make a nice little breeding chamber there, and that's where the eggs are laid. And then the male takes care of the eggs, and the eggs are developing in air. And after a while, the oxygen levels of these little breeding chambers get too low. And so then the male will basically walk out of the breeding chamber onto the beach and will take a big gulp of air and will then go back down into the breeding chamber and release that air, which is richer in oxygen, so that the eggs that are developing in air get more oxygen. Wow. So, as I said, these fish can swim, and they have to keep their skins moist because, like frogs, part of their breathing is through their wet skins. Mm-hmm. And they can swim, but they spend most of their time on land. As I said, they walk around, they breed on land, and they can climb trees. And I mean, you have to love a tree climbing fish. What can I say?
Wow. That has to fall into the most fascinating and the weird animals we've had.
Oh, absolutely. You've got to love them, really.
Well, excuse us, Abby, as we now need to take a short break, but we'll be back.
Okay.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. We'll be back with our guest, Abby Hafer, in a few minutes. WBAI is listener-supported, and listeners often forget to donate unless asked. So please, we beseech you to help fund this marvelous experiment in free speech.
Let's call this a WBAI rent party. Donate for any of the premiums that you'll find on ecologic.wbai.org. Last week, we talked about tritium, and we offered you Dr. Arjun Makhijani's book, Exploring Tritium Dangers, for a $45 donation. If you weren't able to get through last week, please try again, 212-209-2950. We've needed a book like Exploring Tritium Dangers for a long time. It's the only book of its kind, and with the risk of tritium being dumped into the Hudson River, we all need to learn all we can about the possible health effects of this radioactive substance. Isn't it worth $45 to know about something that's important? Call 212-209-2950 to get your copy of Exploring Tritium Dangers and become a member of WBAI at the same time. That membership alone is a $25 value.
Last week's episode, September 27th, has gotten the respect of folks who have been working on Indian Point for decades and is used as an educational resource to send to elected officials. This is a show you are supporting when you donate to Ecologic and WBAI.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and or premium by mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
Here is Celtic Thunder doing their version of A Place in the Choir. All animals have one.
All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud on a telephone wire. Some just clap their hands, a pause, or anything they got. Now, all God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud on a telephone wire. Some just clap their hands, a pause, or anything they got. Now,
listen to the top where the little bird sings, and the melodies and the high notes ringing, and the hoot owl cries over everything, and the blackbird disagrees.
Singing in the nighttime, singing in the day, when the little duck quacks and he's on his way, and the otter hasn't got much to say, and the porcupine talks to himself.
All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud on the telephone wire. Some just clap their hands or paws or anything they got now.
And the cats, they tick up the middle, while the honeybee hums and the cricket fiddles, the donkey brays and the pony neighs, the old great badger sighs.
Listen to the bass, it's the one on the bottom, where the bullfrog croaks and the hippopotamus moans and groans with the big to-do, and the old cow just goes moo.
All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud on the telephone wire. Some just clap their hands, a pause, or anything they got now. It's a simple song, a little song everywhere, by the ox and the fox and the grizzly bear, the dopey alligator and the hawk above, the sly old weasel and the turtle dove. All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud on the telephone wire. Some just clap their hands or paws or anything they got now. All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud on the telephone wire. Some just clap their hands or paws or anything they got now. All God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some sing low and some sing higher. Some sing out loud. Just clap their hands or paws or anything they got now. All God's creatures got a place in the choir.
That was A Place in the Choir by Celtic Thunder.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here in WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein. I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale. We're back with Abby Hafer.
We'd love to hear about your favorite fascinating animals. So you can call with your questions for Dr. Abby Hafer. Call 212-209-2877. Now's your time to call. 212-209-2877. And while we're waiting for your call, we have a very loyal listener. She's here to talk about her favorite animal, the blue jay. Mercy, are you there?
And she'll be here in a few seconds.
Oh, I'm on. Blue jays! Blue jays are my favorite critter. They're amazing. They're so colorful. They're brash. They're very loud, but they're adorable. And I grew up with them in the backyard, but you can see them in New York City. You'll hear, or, and if you yell, I would yell, and they'll come over, say, who are you? They want to check you out. And I fit them out of my hand with peanuts. I throw peanuts, they'll come. So they know when I call, they better come. And they're just really neat. I think they're really fun. They're corvids, which is one of the very successful bird families that are out there. And there's corvids all over the world. And they're not really blue. They're gray. But there's the refraction of the light that makes them look blue. So if you take one of their feathers and put it aside, it turns gray after a while. But there is a gray jay, so I guess they're related. I just think they're great because they're so pretty. And people complain because they eat eggs. It's like, well, what did you have for breakfast? You know, people eat eggs too.
Yep.
And they're just really great birds. And we have callers. You have any callers coming in?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay. You should get the number.
You're done.
And Abby.
Yes.
You have some thoughts about humpback whales that go outside the box.
Humpback whales are amazing. I mean, play behavior is something that exists in a lot of species. You've probably seen dogs playing and cats playing and this kind of thing. But it is something that exists. And one time when I was taking a young woman out on a whale watch, I mean, we have them off the coast of Massachusetts, and you see lots of different cetaceans that way. But this one particular time, and I have heard of these things happening with other people, but this was a really good time. Basically, the whales like to show off is what it comes down to. Where this particular time, the whales were not just breaching, that is to say, coming out of the water and then, you know, diving back in, but they were breaching and then twisting. You know, it was almost like the Olympic diving competition. So I thought that I ought to be standing on board with those number cards in my hand for difficulty and execution, because they were basically doing tricks.
Wow.
Is what it came down to. And it's not like we were feeding them or anything. We were just watching. But they were going alongside the boat and doing all of these tricks. And then there are ones that were further out that were literally standing so that their tails were up in the air. And there would be several of them at a time doing this, and sometimes they would slap the water at a great distance. So there was all kinds of interesting behavior that was clearly not just related to, you know, their next meal or anything like this. And play behavior is something that you see in intelligent species. I'm going to get back to Mercy's comment about corvids, actually, because because corvids are smart too. And you can find videos online of crows that go sledding, where they will find like an old sardine tin and they will fly up to the top of a snow covered sloped roof, and then they will ride the sardine tin down. And
I have a video of that. We'll have to put it on the website.
Yeah, do. I mean, you can find videos, but if there's one you could put on the website, they're just great. And speaking of blue jays, there was one time when I was out camping, and I remember these jays sort of coming up behind me, and they started calling, as they do. And this is normally what I think of as a cat call. It's how they sort of alert the rest of the bird population that there's something in the area. So I heard a few cat calls. And then sort of it got louder and louder and louder. And I thought, wow, there must be something that they're really, really interested in here. I wonder what it is. And they didn't stop. And there were a whole bunch of them. And after a while, I was thinking, so what is it that they're so excited about? And I thought, oh, it's me. I was the one, I was on their territory, thanks very much, and they were not happy about it. So they were telling the world about it and telling me.
Oh, I've got a raven story, another corvid. We were at Glacier National Park, and we saw it was breeding season, and we saw two ravens like on the far horizon to our left doing this aerial dance. And they'd be, you know, flying around in circles and spirals, and they would grab each other's claws, and they went over our head, and they went to the other horizon, and we're watching them. And then they came back, and they performed right over our head. They had not slowed down or paused anywhere on that flight until they came back and went over our head. And we're pretty sure they were performing for us because they knew we were watching. and apparently ravens are known for this.
Very cool.
We all like an audience.
Just to remind you guys, we are taking calls. So if you have a call for Dr. Abby Hafer, call 212-209-2877. We might just have time for one call. We'll see.
We have time for a couple calls.
Yeah.
212-209-2877. Now's your time.
And on the meme that we use to publicize the show, there's a Japanese snow monkey, and I forget why it's there.
Okay, I think you're thinking about Japanese macaques. Okay, they're another wonderful animal. First of all, they are hot tubbing animals. Because they live in cold places, but tectonically active cold places, so you get occasional hot springs. And they will just lie around in the hot spring and have a good time on a snowy day. And they're very social animals. And one of the things that is interesting about them is more what scientists were able to find out about learning and inventing then, which was that they are actually capable of coming up with new behaviors. And in one case, there was a small female who discovered that the rice that scientists had actually put on the beach to basically be able to watch social interactions, because there would be social interactions while these macaques were picking up rice off of the sand. This little girl basically figured out that it was a whole lot easier to take a handful of beach sand that had rice on it and drop it over some water. And then the rice floated and the sand sank. And so then she could just scoop up the rice and eat it. And she came up with a number of interesting behaviors like that. But this also got us to see how a new invention traveled through the population, which was that it started out with this sort of genius of a young girl. And then she taught her friends, and then they all taught their mothers. And you guessed it, the last individuals to learn were the top males. The old males were the last ones to learn the cool new technology. So anyway, that was just an interesting thing.
That's a good metaphor for politics.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. And we have callers. Caller, you're on the air.
Judith from the Upper West Side. My favorite animal. How are you, darling? My favorite thing about animals is the poetry that's written about them. It glorifies each one. I will now recite one written written by a very dear friend of mine. The hippopotamus. How grand to go sliding down a deep trough and to swallow whole loaves of white bread with a cough and through the end of one's nose to blow bubbles and resign the rest of the world to its troubles. I love these things. They're so much fun.
Absolutely.
That was by Alfred.
I didn't count the syllables, but that could have been a haiku.
Animals are inspiring. Yeah. Thank you, Judith.
Okay. Next caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to finish before I got my turn. I'm a New Yorker, and I rescued feral cats and kittens for years, and I'm retired. I'm 84 years old now, so I can't do it anymore. I used to humane cat trap, and I would, and there are many, many colonies of feral cats, that means wild cats, in New York. Most of them are in Harlem and in the boroughs. And nobody is helping them. People feed them, but, you know, people don't, they're supposed to get neutered and spayed so they don't keep having kittens. But I know this is a show about whales, and I actually have been in touch with a few blue jays over the years. But I'm a New Yorker, and I, you know, this is my life. It's been my life, is rescuing these poor feral cats. And
okay.
That is an important issue, and there are programs that help people afford the cost of spaying and neutering feral cats so that they don't, you know, continue to breed so frequently.
And we still have more callers waiting. 212-209-2877, and you're on the air. Hi.
I have a variety of birds in my backyard, blue jays, turtle doves, robins, and I used to have woodpeckers, too, because it was a dead tree next door in the neighbor's yard, and I could look out my window, and I would hear him banging on the tree, so colorful and beautiful. And the blue jays, sometimes I would make a noise, they'd make a noise, I'd make a noise, they'd make a noise. And I was like, they're responding to me, you know, and I'd go, rawr, yeah. Rawr, and they go, rawr, rawr. So, you know, now that I'm retired, I have time to enjoy the birds. I used to just think they were a nuisance back in the day, like pigeons, couldn't stand them. But now I enjoy the birds so much. So thank you for this program. Love your show. And keep up the good work.
I have a blue jay story for you to look out for at your bird feeder, because blue jays they give alarm calls in the woods. And so if there's a predator around, a hawk or a fox, they'll give an alarm call and all the birds will disappear. But they also give false alarm calls. So if they're at a bird feeder and they want all the seed for themselves, they'll give an alarm call. All the birds will take off and they get the seed for themselves. But the other birds realize that was fake, but they're so hardwired to respond to alarm calls that they go away. But they come back a lot sooner when it's a false alarm call. So you can watch that in your backyard and watch blue jays do that.
And you mentioned, you know, the dead tree and the woodpecker, and, you know, those dead trees are really valuable for insects, for woodpeckers, for the local wildlife to be a habitat and to... Yeah.
Oh, and woodpeckers can give you a valuable service worth thousands of dollars. There was I was on a national e-list called Bird Chat, and somebody had a woodpecker pecking on their house, and his first thought was, "I want to kill it." And the Bird Chat person goes, "Wait a minute, let me see if I can find out how to get rid of it. Don't kill it yet." And somebody said, "If you got a woodpecker pecking on your house right now, you've got termites."
Whoa, right.
All right. So she told her neighbor, you've got termites. That's why the woodpecker's pecking. He had his house inspected, and this woodpecker saved him thousands of dollars because he got it early.
No, the sooner you catch that. And we have another caller on the line.
Wow.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. This is Angel. Great show.
Thanks, Angel.
Hi, I wanted to put a good word in for the Puerto Rican mascot, the coqui, a tree frog that sounds like coqui, coqui. But unfortunately, in Hawaii, it's become like the number one pest because of the sound. There are no predators to it. So I'd like to start a project, a reclamation project, to bring the coquis back to Puerto Rico. So maybe you guys could help me with that.
Maybe the Hawaiians would like you to take them.
They would.
Yeah,
it's interesting. They're vanishing in Puerto Rico, but they're thriving in Hawaii, where they don't want them.
Yeah,
right. Well, right.
The Cokies are also really interesting from a behavioral perspective because that high-pitched call, Cokie, is something that can be picked up by other Cokie frogs, even in all the jungle noise. And there's a lot of noise in a jungle, but they are very well wired to hear that sound among all the others. So it's an interesting phenomenon.
That is neat. And we still have another caller, 212-209-2877, and you are on the air.
Hi, thank you. I do enjoy your show, and thank you for your guests. I don't often get to hear it, and I want to thank the caller that you had to rush off, the 84-year-old who did look out for animals, and we should try to help those people, refer them to the right places. I identify with one caller used to think that a lot of them were just nuisance, and though I've admired beautiful birds and sounds, pigeons I didn't often admire, and it does bug me. I'd like you to respond to this about people feeding animals. Not only does it bring rodents, but doesn't it take away their natural ability to forage? And people don't want the pigeons all over them. And the other question is, I don't know if it's relevant, that new beautiful spotted butterfly that we're supposed to kill. Can you tell us a little about it? Because they seem to be attracted to me, and I hate the idea of killing things. Thank you.
Abby, do you know about has a spotted lanternfly gotten to the Boston area yet?
I have heard about it. I haven't seen one for myself.
I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just saying, and I should mention that the food that pigeons eat during the day would have been eaten by mice and rats at night. So every pigeon that's eating food during the day is keeping down the mouse and rat population. It's not making it greater, it's making it lesser.
Well, I hate to say it, but it is time to wrap up. I'm sorry we didn't get to one of my favorite animals, the immortal jellyfish. Everybody wants to be immortal, but we'll have to do that another time. So thanks all for joining us with Dr. Abby Hafer. For more information, go to www.professionaldebunker.com. That's professionaldebunker.com. We have lots of links for more information on our website, ecoradio.org. That's ecoradio.org. We also have an archive of our past shows.
Join us next Wednesday, October 11th at 10 a.m. as we bring you a report back on the Farm Bill Conference. The Farm Bill is important to you. It affects food choices, food prices, wildlife habitats, and SNAP or food stamp benefits. To support Ecologic, you can donate any amount, get one of our premiums, or become our BAI buddy.
And Dr. Abby Hafer has a book on unintelligent design out there. I highly recommend it. Her last name is spelled H-A-F-E-R. So look it up.
Right. I have two books, The Not-So-Intelligent Designer, and the other one is called Darwin's Apostles.
And we love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, please go to www.ecoradio.org and sign up for our email list. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
WBAI is community radio, and there are lots of ways to get involved. And, of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes a broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent, pledging as a BAI buddy now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We're always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. If you listen live, we may be able to take your call and answer your question. This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes.
Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Wednesday, October 11th at 10 a.m. for the Farm Bill. Check out our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So expensive energy. So
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation board responsible for local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting on Wednesday, October 11th at 7 p.m. And in addition, this Wednesday at 6:30 p.m., before the local station board convenes, WBAI management will hold a question and answer session, taking questions from listeners. This is the first LSB meeting after the expected announcement of WBAI election results. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, October 11th at 7 p.m. And this Wednesday, it will be preceded by a 6:30 p.m. question and answer session where management will take questions from listeners. The meeting and Q&A session will be held through the Zoom remote meeting service. The LSB meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting and or the preceding Q&A session is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website. You can also access them both by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099 and enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. The meeting ID again, 922-457-2995. And as if that wasn't enough numbers, we also have a password. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, so it's 995-995-99. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting or the Q&A? No, but we sure hope that you do. I thank you.
This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.